It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
KMJ, and of course, the Ray Appleton Program. I mean, who else is going to be playing this stuff, right? The Beatles and Paperback Writer. Still another song that nobody really knows the origin of or what it means. McCartney back in the news, a show that's going to be airing on the Beeb on the 23rd of October, where he insists that John Lennon broke up the band. He didn't do it. Stop blaming him. Couple of phone calls, and then we have to move on. Vince, you're on KMJ. Hi, talk to me.
Hi, Ray. Hey. I wanted to share reminiscence as someone who was born in 57 and an adolescent when they came out, and a fact I found out last year that blew me away about the Beatles. I remember when they came on Sullivan. Now, how old would I have been? Around six, seven, something like
seven.
That?
Seven. You would have been seven.
Yeah. In my house, the people who wanted to see him on Ed Sullivan were not me. It was my mother and my grandmother. So they went to watch Sullivan. So you know what I did? I went into the kitchen, got my dad's portable Norelco TV out, and I watched Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea instead of watching the Beatles. However, during a commercial break, they were still playing, so I came out and caught a glimpse of them, looked at them for a few seconds and thought, eh, went back to watching Admiral Nelson on TV. And then fact I wanted to share that's going to blow thousands of your listeners away, because for 50 years I never knew this. Well, you would know this because you spent time in England.
Yeah.
The song Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
Okay, I always thought those were just nonsensical lyrics.
Oh, no.
Then last year I was watching a home improvement show from England, and the dad was, I'm working on the computer and it's in the background. The dad says he's going to put a Helter Skelter in his son's room, and I stop and I look and I say, what, is he talking about the Beatles or what? And I discovered a Helter Skelter is like a big cone-shaped slide that you go up to the top in, and then you slide on the outside of it, and suddenly that song finally made sense to me.
Yeah, and it also has, you know, some, as people say, origin references to the Manson killings. Helter Skelter was written on the wall in blood, I don't want to reminisce about that per se, but Vince, thank you. Interesting story. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Give me a break. Mike, you're on KMJ. Hi.
Hi, Ray. I was born the same year as you were in 1964. We were 14 and Beatlemania hit, so we went through the whole thing about the same time.
Yeah.
The most impressive thing I've heard about John Lennon was at one point before he died, he chartered a sailboat and he sailed from Rhode Island to Bermuda.
Could be. I have not heard that about him, but I'm sure that's possible. Go on.
And then, okay, the captain of the charter boat, he was at the helm for about 50 hours straight. It's totally worn out. He says, hey, come here, boy. Take the helm for now. I got to get some, go below. And so just as the storm was coming in, and so he briefed him and tied a rope around him, a tether rope, and told him, what do you focus on the horizon and have at it. And John Lennon was really timid at first, but boy, by the time the shift was over, he was belting out sea candies at the top of his voice.
Well, that's one that got by me, my friend. I had not heard that story before, but it sounds like something he would have pulled off. Anyway, thanks for the call. It's a fun time to reminisce about that. And you think about those times now, and you compare them to now, and it's like, you know, what in the hell are we doing? Why can't things be as simple and as fun as they were back then in the 60s? And I'm blessed. I mean, I'm so glad, you know, I'm a little older now. I was born in 1950. But I'm glad I went through all that. I went through the 50s. I went through the 60s. I went through the 70s. A lot of, you know, lovely, lovely music and cultural changes up the wazoo, you know, and living through it firsthand was fabulous. Just fabulous. So I'm anxious to hear this particular program coming from the Beeb on October the 23rd, and somehow, some way, I will dial that in. Let me grab one more call, and then I got to move on before I get fired. Jack, you're on KMJ. Hi.
Hi, Ray. Good afternoon. I was 14 when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan. My whole family sat around the TV set. We always watched Ed Sullivan. And I was unimpressed with the Beatles. And I didn't really care for their songs. And when I went to school the next day at Sequoia Junior High, all I heard was, "Oh, the Beatles, oh, the Beatles." And the girls were fainting and swooning for him and everything. And I guess the guys may have been a little bit jealous, but I hated the Beatles because they were popular.
I know a number of guys that did, you know, for that reason. They took all the girls away, you know. And too bad, so sad. That meant more for me back then. And I took advantage of it. Since we're on the... thank you, folks. That was fun for indulging me on that one. Since we're on the something to do with Britain, the UK police have announced they're not going to be acting against Prince Andrew over the abuse claim. You know what that's all about. I'll refresh your memory. But the British police, and I knew this was coming, say they will not take any action against Prince Andrew after a review prompted by the Jeffrey Epstein accuser, who claims that, you know, he, the prince, sexually assaulted her. Now, the victim claims that she was trafficked by Epstein to have sex with Andrew in London in 2001 when she was 17 and a minor under U.S. law. And she is suing the prince in a U.S. court. Now, Andrew, if you lost count, he's the second son of Queen Elizabeth. He denies, of course, the allegations. And he told the Beeb back in 2019 in that interview that he never had sex with this particular woman. He goes, it didn't happen. In August, London's Metropolitan Police began a review of the allegations connected to the late convicted sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein, who allegedly committed suicide, allegedly. And the police chief, Cressida Dick, said at the time, no one is above the law. So the force said in a statement late yesterday that its reviews has concluded we're taking no further action, end quote. It also said that no action over the allegations first reported by Channel 4 News that Epstein's alleged accomplice, you know, trafficked and groomed the abused women and girls all over, you know, other girls in the UK, you know. Miss Maxwell, the British socialite, is in a U.S. jail awaiting trial on the charges that she recruited teenage girls for Epstein to abuse. And the force over there says it's continuing to, you know, work with other law enforcement agencies who are leading the investigation into matters associated with Epstein. And after weeks of legal skirmishing, you know, lawyers for Andrew acknowledged late last month that the prince had formally been served with her lawsuit. And the prince has got to file responses by the end of this month. And this is the civil lawsuit again. Last week, a U.S. judge agreed, you know, that with Andrew's lawyers to receive a copy of a 2009 settlement between Epstein's gal and Epstein that they believe will nullify the civil case against the prince. Interesting. Now, he's 61 years old now, and he has been banished. You aware of this? I think most people remember in the news. He has been banished from public royal duties amid the scandal over his friendship with a convicted pedophile, Epstein, who was, you know, found dead in the detention center. I think it was in New York. Correct me if I'm wrong. In August of it was in New York in 2019. You know, while awaiting trial on sex trafficking charges, etc., his death was ruled a suicide. Still, there's many people that are like, no, probably not. Probably not. The Associated Press does not typically identify people who they say are victims of sexual assault unless they choose to come forward publicly, as the paramour of Epstein did. Okay? But it doesn't look like anything's going to be happening to Prince Andrew, who got, you know, bumped out of the royalty anyway because of his relationship with Epstein. But as far as the lawsuit goes, not going to happen, maybe. I mean, they've got so much money. They can settle this. Boom. You know, without losing any sleep whatsoever. But in terms of anything in the way of breaking the law and all of that, the British police are saying, no, we ain't going to do it. They probably didn't use the word ain't, but they have no desire to press anything legally with Prince Andrew. And you know that that came from the buck. That came from Buckingham Palace. Don't you dare. I'm sure that's the only thing the Queen had to write on a little piece of paper to be delivered to the cop shop, and that was it. Let's take a break on KMJ. We will continue with the Ray Appleton program on News Talk 580 1059. All right?
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page,
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Now, Ray Appleton.
A couple of things, you know, in the news and current events of, I think, big interest. There's the wife of a naval engineer. I'm going to get to this story today or tomorrow. She's accused of trying to sell nuclear submarine secrets. She must have been really bored, didn't have anything better to do. Cyber attacks, you know, are concerning to most Americans. That's a biggie on our fear list. And especially here in California, it's a big one because of the weak grid system. You know, the Russians, the Chinese, anybody else who has that ability to shut us down by shutting down our grid that is old, feeble, and just in the worst case. We've got the House number 2 Republican refusing to say the election wasn't stolen. And that's Steve Scalise. That's a story. We'll elaborate on that one shortly. And have any of you been tapped by all of these cancellations of more than 1,000 flights at Southwest Airlines? You know, Senator Ted Cruz is saying it's Biden's illegal vaccine mandate at work. And there hasn't been any, you know, denial or whatever when asked that question, you know, over at good old Southwest Airlines. They're quiet. They just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, you know, they're proving not to answer, you know, the questions. They're just not answering the question as to why, you know, 1,000 flights have been canceled. And I know they just started up here in Fresno, didn't they? That's got to be hurting some folks. But getting back to this story from Steve Scalise, I found this very interesting, you know, because people consider him to be straight ahead, you know, not on any fringe, anything like that. He's the second ranking Republican in the House. He repeatedly yesterday refused to say that the 2020 election wasn't stolen. So kind of standing by Donald Trump's story that Joe Biden won the White House because of mass voter fraud. Now, it's been more than 11 months after, you know, you allegedly picked out your president. And it's been 9 months since Biden was inaugurated. And hasn't he done just a great job? No. And Scalise is unwilling during this national television interview to acknowledge the legitimacy of the vote. Instead, you know, sticking to his belief that the election results should not have been certified by Congress. Huh. Quote, I've been very, very clear from the beginning. If you look at a number of states, they didn't follow their state-passed laws that govern the election for president. Number one, that's true. That's true. That is why the United States Constitution says, what the United States Constitution says. They don't say that states determine the rules as they are. They say the state legislates. I'm messing this off. They say the state legislatures determine the rules. Now I finally spit it out correctly. I wanted to quote him correctly. Now, pressed by Chris Wallace on whether the election went, you know, beyond a few irregularities, or whatever you want to call them, to be considered, you know, stolen, Scalise responded, stolen, not just irregularities. It's the states that did not follow the laws, which are set by the Constitution, that says what they're supposed to follow. So this has been, you know, on and off again. It's finally beginning to die down. But now with Scalise standing, you know, out in front and pressing this one, I fear it's going to, you know, fire up all over again. And as the former president is, you know, mulling a 2024 presidential bid, he has been intensely, supporting his position that the election was stolen. I'm really nervous talking about this one because for me, I still haven't seen that. And I know that you're going to call and you're going to say, Ray, you know, blah, 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 blah. I still haven't seen that hardcore evidence that there was a deliberate, that's the word, deliberate movement to steal the election from Donald Trump. Okay? Now, what Steve says about states not following their state laws, we saw that. We saw it in Pennsylvania. We saw it in a number of states. We saw it in Georgia. Now, the House Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, who's vying to become speaker if the GOPs, you know, take the control of the House in 2022, he continues to defend Trump, you know, on what many people in the media say are the false allegations about the elections, the assertions. You know, at a rally on Saturday in Iowa, where Trump did very, very well in polling, I told you about that last week, he spent almost 10 minutes arguing that he'd won, you know, Arizona and Georgia and Pennsylvania. Senator Charles Grassley and also the Governor Kim Richards, they stood by and they welcomed his big return to their state. And last week in Iowa, the polling was out that against Joe Biden, he nailed him bad. But, you know, the fact is Joe Biden is the president of the United States. And his former attorney general, William Barr, found no evidence of widespread election corruption. You know, the allegations of massive voter fraud have been refuted over and over and over again by state officials who are either telling the truth or don't want to stick their neck in a noose. And you even have, you know, an arm of Homeland Security during the Trump administration saying nothing went down that was, you know, thoroughly out of the way wrong. But Scalise on Sunday appeared to be referring to the legal argument made in several lawsuits backed by the former president before and after last November's election that the Constitution gives power, the power of the election, to the administration exclusively to state lawmakers, okay? And the suits sought to invalidate a number of pandemic-era accommodations, including the expanded mail voting, you know, and yeah, I'm behind that. That's, you know, was put in place by a lot of governors, state election officials, and judges. And we can question whether in some states those individuals had the power to do that. And I think rightfully so we can question that aspect of it. Now, Liz Cheney, a Republican, no, and daughter of you-know-who, who is serving on the House committee investigating the January the 6th, you know, insurrection, on Sunday, she slammed Scalise for spreading Trump's big lie. So she's not standing with her party on this. And I'm not sure why. And is her father behind this, you know, backing her on the position? I mean, he's been very, very quiet about what his daughter's up to. Quote, millions of Americans have been sold a fraud that the election was stolen. That's a tweet from Liz Cheney. Republicans have a duty to tell the American people this is not true. Perpetuating the big lie is an attack on the core of our constitutional republic. End quote. Now, I don't know why she is so emphatic about taking the position that she's taking. Unless her father is involved in her opinion. And again, I don't know. I have all the respect in the world in Dick Cheney. I thought he was the greatest vice president we ever had. And if he has an, you know, opinion, you know, au contraire to Donald Trump on the election, that okay, that's fine. He's entitled to his opinion. And, you know, hers to hers. But I keep waiting to see if she's going to change her party affiliation. You know, become an independent. I mean, that she could do that, I think, rather gracefully. If she became a Democrat, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, could you imagine how that would hit the fan? That would hit the fan big time. Now, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm a little surprised Scalise is, you know, so forward on this. And he's like the number two guy right behind, you know, McCarthy. And, of course, you know, Devin thinks something went down, too. And Devin's, you know, in intelligence. And it kind of tells you that, I mean, that's his job to know what's going on behind the scenes, sort of, kind of. I don't know that we will ever know the answer unless somebody comes forward and says, yeah, look here, look what I've got, and look what I did. And so far, we haven't heard from that person, you know. And that's, you know, for me, what needs to happen. And I'm not talking about, you know, that person being Rudy Giuliani or anybody else. I mean, they have to be completely, in my book, stripped from any relationship with the former president. All right? You know, I wish it were true. And it may be. Because certainly the president we got out of this deal, oh my God. I mean, he's just, he's ruining so many great things about America, you know? And even though it's only been, what did I say, 9 months thereabouts since he was, you know, inaugurated, it seems like it's been forever, doesn't it? It seems like a long, long time. Anyway, we have to take a little break for news here at KMJ. We will update that. Other things we need to get into before I get out of here and turn things over to Skip and Cole.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
It's free.
To comment on anything, 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Do it. Connie, go ahead. Hi.
Yeah, Ray. Hey, I was excited to hear that Steve Scalise still thinks there's voter fraud because it's been going on a long time and it needs to be investigated. We can't really go on with elections until we figure this out. But you can go on, frankspeech.com, and you can watch a seminar they had about it and learn a lot of things about it. So I hope your listeners will go to that. And also, after this election, we're a member of EIP, Election Integrity Project California, and we even went to from here to Nevada, and we canvassed Nevada. And 20% of the people that we canvassed, that's going around to each voter. And then you make sure they lived where they said they lived, and 20% of them did not. So even just that simple thing showed that there's something going on. There was in 2000 about, there was a Mr. Gardner that ran for Congress in Kern County. And after he went to bed, he had won, and he woke up in the morning and he lost. And so him and his wife spent 2 years studying the vote. And like one of the votes was came from the Salvation Army. 15 votes came out of that Salvation Army address. And so he studied it, and he found that he indeed had won. So he went to his local registrar of voters, and they wouldn't do anything. So he went to the Attorney General of California and to the Secretary of State, and they weren't interested. They wouldn't do anything. And then he went to D.C., to talk to somebody there, nobody, Ray, would do anything. And this has been going on a long, long time.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that anybody wouldn't do anything about it. I mean, if there's something going on this late into the game, so much, you know, down the road, there's going to be a lot of egg on a lot of faces and all hell is going to break loose. I mean, I wish it would. For the sake of, you know, my own sanity, to figure out one way or the other if indeed something really, really happened. But anyway, thanks for the call. And I'm not familiar with that case down south that's almost local. I'm going to check that out just for kicks. It's not that I don't think something happened. I think it did. But we just keep winding up talking about the same thing over and over again. You know, somebody did this, somebody did You know, and I need more, you know, and I need some courageous whistleblower who knows something for sure that can really throw a spanner into the works. My British getting back into my language there to come forward and do so. The drug maker Merck says U.S. regulators today, they've asked them to authorize its pill. I love this. I hope it's true against COVID-19. In what, you know, would add an entirely different, new, and easy to use weapon to the world's, you know, arsenal against the pandemic. I love it. That's great. I mean, this is something else that's come on very, very quickly. Or at least we haven't heard about it. That's why it sounds like it's very quickly. They started working on this probably from day one. If cleared by the Food and Drug Administration, it's a decision that could come in a matter of weeks. It would be the first pill to treat COVID-19. You know, all other FDA treatments against the disease require an IV or injection. And the antiviral pill that people, you know, could take in their home to reduce their symptoms and speed up their recovery, that could prove to be groundbreaking. And it could ease the massive crushing caseload, although that's somewhat diminished now in U.S. hospitals, helping to curb the outbreaks in the poor countries and with weak healthcare systems. It could also bolster a two-pronged approach, if I may put it that way, to the pandemic treatment by way of medication and prevention, primarily through vaccinations. The FDA will scrutinize, you know, the company's data on safety and effectiveness of the drug before rendering decision. Now, the drug is called, oh my God, Molnupiravir. Molnupiravir. So Merck and its partner, which is called Ridgeback Biotherapeutic, said they specifically asked the agency to grant an emergency use for adults with mild to moderate COVID-19 who are at risk for severe disease or hospitalization. That's roughly the way COVID-19 infusion drugs are being used. Okay? So the value there is that it's a pill. So you don't have to deal with infusion centers and all the factors around that. So saying the particular doctor who's a senior vice president over there at Merck in the infectious disease unit, he says it's a very powerful tool to add to the toolbox. Now, the company reported earlier this month that the pill cut hospitalizations and deaths in half amongst the patients with the early symptoms of COVID-19. All right. You know, we never hear of anything going on for somebody who has severe symptoms, but from, you know, early symptoms to moderate symptoms, help is on the way, apparently. The results have been so strong that independent medical experts monitoring the trial recommended stopping it early and getting it to the FDA to get this on the market. Ugh. Now, side effects seem to be a little bit similar between patients who got the drug and those in a testing group who received a dummy pill. But Merck has not publicly detailed the types of problems reported, which will be a key part of the FDA's review. Trust me on that. Take it to El Banco. I don't know why, but I just thought of an Italian rock group I used to listen to called Banco de Muto de Socorroso. Yeah, I know. It's like Premiata Fornari and Marconi was another Italian group that I loved. I don't know why, but the Italian rock groups back in the 70s had to have a name as long as a city block in the States, you know. Banco de Muto de Socorroso. I mean, hello. Has to do with a bank, obviously. But since the beginning of the pandemic, health experts have stressed the need for a convenient pill. That's why I love this story so much. You know, the goal is very similar to what class? Have you figured it out? Tamiflu, right. And that's a 20-year-old medication that shortens the illness of the flu by a day or two and blunts the severity of the symptoms like fever, cough, and stuffy nose. You might remember when I was tested for COVID-19 on the air. Back in the early days of the pandemic was when a Dr. Boz's associate, is Dr. Green, who's got a series of sports medicine clinics and a walk-in places for urgent care. He's a very, very good doctor, very hip doctor. And I tested negative for COVID-19, but I tested positive for the flu. And sure enough, that weekend, I thought maybe it was psychological, but it was quite real. I got sick. And he had prescribed Tamiflu if I had any of the symptoms. I had never taken Tamiflu before. That stuff works. That stuff really works. I was surprised pleasantly. So to have a pill like that for COVID-19, hello. I mean, that's great. So assuming the FDA's authorization, I'm predicting it will happen. The U.S. government has agreed to buy enough of the pills to treat 1.7 million people. Hello. At a price of roughly $700 for each course of the treatment. Wow. That's less than half the price, though, for the antibody drugs purchased by the U.S. government. It's over $2,000 per infusion, you know, and still more expensive than many antiviral pills from other conditions. All right, so that's yeah, I get it. Merck's, one of their doctors said in an interview that the $700 figure does not represent the final price for the medication, though. It ain't cheap. Quote, we set that price before we had any data, so it's just in one contract. Obviously, we're going to be responsible about this and make the drug as accessible to as many people around the world as we can. I would hope so. You know, the company is based in Jersey, and it says it's in its purchase talks with governments around the world. They're still using a sliding price scale based upon each country's economic means. So that's very fair. And also, the company has, you know, signed licensing deals with several Indian generic drug makers to produce low-cost versions of the drug for low-income countries. Now, I always worry when I hear about a low-cost version of a drug. Does that mean it's going to be, you know, have a lower impact than a regular version of the drug? By intent and design, no. But that's always the first thing that hits my head. So this is, I think, amazingly good news. And this thing could be weeks away. Right? Good news, methinks? Yeah. It's also good news for some of our sponsors that we're taking a break now, because we'll make some money and so will they. All right? And we'll continue on the Ray Appleton program with Skip and Blake Taylor coming up at 2:05 today, right after me on KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now, KMJNow.com.
Many of you, as I'm just looking very quickly at my email and my messenger on Facebook, you know, reeling over the stories today that I had about California, you know, forcing big retail giant stores to sell gender-neutral toys and have gender-neutral toy sections. We're still trying to figure out what the hell that means. And also the accompanying news about the future bans on chainsaws and, you know, lawnmowers and leaf blowers and putting every, you know, landscaping and gardener out of business. A lot of the equipment, if you buy it before 2024, and if it's gas generated, it will be allowed for use. These are for purchases after that point. But you know, incremental California, that stuff is going to, after 2024, who is ever governor then, pray it's not this guy, believe me. They're going to put some kind of cap on that. So by 2029, even if you've purchased the stuff before 2024, it'll be no good. That's just the way we are. You know, so those stories are fresh. Google them, look them up. Yeah. Something I wanted to get into in detail today, but I'll do it tomorrow for sure, because this just flat out interests me. Many Americans, you know, have crossed party lines, and everybody seems to be very serious about cyber attacks in the U.S., very worried about it, especially here in California. And China and Russia seem to be the major, major threats. This is according to a major and somewhat thorough poll. I did appreciate the methodology on this. The poll is by the Pearson Institute and the Associated Press, you know, Center for Public Affairs and Research, showing that about 9 out of 10 Americans are at least somewhat concerned about hacking that involves their personal information or their financial institution or, more so, government agencies and certain utilities. About two-thirds say that they are very or extremely concerned about this. And roughly about 75% of the respondents say, you know, in unison, China and Russia, these are the governments that are the major threats to cybersecurity in the USA. And at least half also see involvement by the Iranian government, the governmental bodies of Iran, and non-governmental bodies of Iran threatening. Ain't that the truth? So the broad consensus, if I may call it that, highlights the growing impact of cyber attacks that are increasingly connected worldwide and could boost the efforts by President Joe Biden and other lawmakers to force critical industries to boost their cyber defenses and impose, you know, reporting requirements for companies that get hacked. Maybe that's not such a bad idea. And the poll comes amid a wave of high-profile ransomware attacks, something we talked about the other day in detail. And this cyber espionage, let me call it that. These are campaigns in the last year that have compromised sensitive government records and led to the shutdown of the operations of, you know, energy companies and hospitals and what else, schools and others. And, you know, the big concern that we have here in California is the grid. If they attack the grid and knock it down, disable it, which, you know, to do that to our grid that is so old and so feeble would be a debilitating blow to the state of California and to the United States. I can see why the concern is so high in the state of California. This bothers me, too, a whole heck of a lot. And why there isn't a concerted effort to do something proactively in California about the grid and even in the federal arena is beyond me, because we just seem to pass the buck on that all the time. And let the next guy worry about it. 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 Well, when that guy that's got to worry about it, eventually down the road, if something happens to it, I wouldn't want to be that guy, you know. I asked my son, who's back in Indianapolis now, did he start his job today? I think maybe he started at the Indianapolis Star today. He's the entertainment columnist back there. It's a job he's always wanted. You got it. You know, when he tells people he's from California by way of Las Vegas, they think he's absolutely from Mars. And in the neighborhood conversation about some of the things like our ailing grid system and a lot of the things that are oh so Californian, back in Indiana, they just think, wow, what are we doing? Why don't we do something about it? And the fact that somebody like a Gavin Newsom could get, you know, recalled and still keep his job with better numbers than he had when he was first elected, from their point of view, as just common, ordinary, middle-of-the-country citizens, they're lost. They're just totally lost. And Roy's, you know, explaining everything over and over again. And he's very happy to be gone. Very happy to be out of California. Cheaper, less hassle. You know, I mean, you wouldn't think of Indiana as optimum. I mean, I sure as hell wouldn't. But he's thrilled. He loves it. He's digging it. He's digging it. But, you know, I think he'll always be California born and bred. Anyway, I got a split coming up, as I mentioned, Skip. And today, you get Blake Taylor, the living legend. Yeah, he's one too. Yeah, why not? And somebody else who's approaching that status is this guy that you're going to hear right now with his comments on the news. He's, one hell of a commentator. We love him. It's Michael Germanuel Jr., and I love you. I'll see you tomorrow on KMJ.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.